Clomp. Footsteps. Big footsteps. All at once, the T-Rex skeleton came over the hill, following the tracks. The thing was huge. The dinosaur had all its bones, with no eyes, no skin, no flesh, but all its teeth. Philby shouted, "Keep running! Don't slow down!" Finn's cold, unwilling legs slowed him. He scrambled ahead. The T-Rex charged, lowering its head and coming for them. Finn was behind Philby, close to the charge. Clomp! 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 The ground shook so violently that Finn fell. He slid down the rails, caught hold, and regained his balance. The bones clattered as the dinosaur charged. The boys climbed the next rise and jumped over. The beast moved faster. Finn made a mistake by glancing back. The beast snorted dust out of the holes in its skull where nostrils should have been. It lowered its head once again and picked up speed, the jaws clapping open and shut, sounding like a door being slammed. Finn cleared the top of the roller coaster's next rocky peak, with the dinosaur's jawbone snapping only a few feet from him now. Finn was going to be eaten. He slid down the last descending slope of the roller coaster, as if he was sliding down an enormous banister. The track leveled off here, giving the dinosaur the advantage. It snapped and caught a piece of Finn's shirt. The track curved ahead. Finn, finding speed he didn't know he had, cried, "Help!
Physics class!" shouted Philby back at him. "The track is banked! What do I care?"
The T-Rex stumbled and lost a few yards. The boys hurried up the slight rise into the steep turn.
"The track is banked!" Philby repeated.
Finn understood then what had to be done. He was the one trailing. His heart lodged in his throat as he stopped just before the apex of the turn. He faced the beast, making a target of himself.
"Come and get it!"
he shouted at the T-Rex. He waved his arms like a matador taunting the bull. The huge mass of rattling bones, surrounded by a cloud of dust, bore down on him. Faster and faster it came. Finn waited. And waited. Knowing he had to time his move perfectly, the T-Rex charged. Just as the skeleton's teeth were a foot away from his chest, Finn dove off the track. The beast faltered, lurched, and tipped to its left when the track suddenly curved to the right. The bones of an outer leg splintered and snapped at the knee. The monster rolled, broke through the plywood of the scene's mountain backdrop, and tumbled over the side. Finn watched as it landed with a noisy explosion of broken bones that scattered like tree branches. Philby, who also stopped, looked down at Finn and helped him up to the rail.
"Wait till they see that on their cameras!"
The boys turned and hurried off into the night. 27. Since all of the kids were hungry, they left the apartment together and reconvened at Cosmic Ray's Starlight Cafe. Finn led the way, passing right through the locked front door. Maybeck surprised the others by cooking up decent-tasting turkey burgers. They stayed in the kitchen area and kept the lights off so as not to be seen. Exit signs and a few overhead security lights provided the only illumination. Finn and Philby fashioned a table out of a rolling cart with locking wheels. Inverted plastic tubs and buckets served as chairs. The two girls sat together on one side, Finn and Philby on the other. Maybeck joined them last and took the head of the table. Philby placed a paper napkin in front of them.
"This is everything we have," he explained,
jotting down the letters they'd acquired by following the clues in the fable. F-M-E-Y-I-R-S-T-P-N.
"They must spell something," Charlene said.
"If I was at a computer, if I had an anagram generator," Philby said.
He wrote the letters out again, this time leaving more room around each one. He tore the letters apart. A few minutes later, they had Scrabble letters made out of a torn napkin. The kids studied the letters, calling out words they saw.
"Men!"
Charlene said.
"Leave that to you," Willa quipped.
Philby set the letters aside. Finn said,
"Spit!"
He pulled these out as well.
"Fry is left,"
Philby pointed out.
"Men fry spit?"
Willa asked.
"Men spit fry,"
Charlene suggested.
"No way," Philby said. "We'll try again."
He reshuffled the 10 letters.
E. N. P. S. T. M. Y. F. R. I.
"I'm killer at Scrabble,"
Charlene announced.
"If I do say so myself."
"Have at it,"
Philby said. Charlene arranged the letters into groups, broke up those groups, and tried again. Her hands moved very fast, like a card dealer. She assembled them into My Pit ferns.
Very good, Willa said encouragingly.
My tip ferns.
Again,
Philby said. Finn kept track, writing down all the variations. Firm spy net.
That's an interesting one, Philby said.
Finn made sure to get it down. Men fist pry.
You are good at this,
Willa said, impressed.
We all have our talents,
Charlene quipped. Then, two right in a row. Met fry spin. My pins fret. Suddenly, Maybeck sneezed, sending the letters airborne. Finn and Philby snagged a few of them and returned them to the table. Others floated down like large snowflakes. They settled, one by one.
Wait!
Finn called out. He gasped as he saw what the letters were spelling all by themselves. Y. F. I. R. S. T. P. E. N. Finn licked the tip of his finger, touched the W, and turned it over. He then neatened the rest. My first pen.
A stonecutter's quill. It's Walt Disney's first pen,
Philby said.
Oh my gosh!
But what does it mean?
Charlene said.
It's the next clue. It means we've got to find Walt's first pen,
Philby answered. Maybeck groaned.
You've got to be kidding me.
But where?
Charlene asked. Silence.
Is there a museum or something?
Finn asked. The kids all shook their heads.
There's that thing, One Man's Dream, Willa stated. Over in Disney MGM. It's kind of like a museum, I suppose.
Philby said,
That sounds relevant.
What are you, a lawyer?
Maybeck said. Willa continued.
As I remember, there's stuff there, like an old desk and models and things like that.
Worth a try, Finn muttered softly.
Wayne,
Philby said, drawing everyone's attention.
That is a question for Wayne,
Maybeck said.
I paid him a visit, asked him to join us in the apartment. He said his hip was bothering him, and that if we wanted to see him, it would have to be at his place.
Well then,
Finn said,
I guess that's that.
They split up into two groups, Finn with Willa, Maybeck and Philby with Charlene, and left the restaurant 5 minutes apart. The area of greatest risk was Main Street, which was the park's sole entrance and exit. You couldn't leave or enter the Magic Kingdom without walking down Main Street. The fire station was up at Town Square, at the opposite end of the street from where they were. When Finn and Willa reached the park end of Main Street, the area near the castle, they stayed close to the storefronts, ducking into doorways and sneaking glances out onto the empty street. Twice they hid in the shadows against a door as Finn spotted the taillights of golf carts in the distance. He checked his watch. In 2 minutes, the other three would leave the restaurant. The idea had been for Finn and Willa to be safely inside Wayne's by then. The most risk came with crossing the street. Finn signaled to Willa and counted down with his fingers. 3, 2, 1. They took off across the street, two blurs of dull, colorful light. As they did, Finn had the pronounced feeling that someone was watching him. He glanced over his shoulder and thought he saw a shadow move in one of the doorways. But who? Door to door they moved up Main Street. Finn looked back, but there was no more sign of anyone following. When he was sure they were in the clear, he led Willa toward the fire station and up the back stairs. Wayne answered the door as if he'd been waiting for them.
I think you've done it,
Wayne said, with all five DHIs gathered in his apartment. Philby and Finn had explained their solution to the fable. Wayne continued.
It was the glasses, you see. That reference to perspective was where we failed all these years. You should be very proud of yourselves.
Is that it?
Maybeck asked.
Can we start sleeping again? For real?
You can try, Wayne answered. But I'm willing to think you'll have to see it through.
See what through?
Maybeck complained.
You wanted us to solve the fable, and we did.
Wayne stared at Finn until the boy said,
It's not solved. Maybe the pen is the end of it.
It's possible, Wayne said. But I wouldn't count on it.
Why can't you take it from here? Maybeck asked.
I could try, Wayne answered. But I'm not sure that would solve your crossing over problem.
You designed us to cross over, so undesign us, Charlene said.
If only it were that easy. Now, I'm afraid Finn's right. You'll need to see this through.
You're after her,
Maybeck said, finally understanding.
Was this ever about the fable, or is that just a way to smoke her out?
It's very much about the fable, Wayne answered. I sense some hostility in you, Terry.
Do you really? Maybeck snorted and crossed his arms. That wouldn't be because I was kidnapped, would it? And now you want me coming back for more? Willa asked.
Is he right? Are we supposed to deliver that thing, Maleficent? How do we do that?
You take things one at a time, Wayne replied. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
One man's dream, Finn said.
You can go in as a DHI, but you won't get out with what you want, Wayne stated, surprising them. Think about it. You might get inside, but the pen would not come out with you. The pen is material and real, whereas you...
Oh, not, Philby answered. So we have to steal it? Finn asked.
You're going to have to borrow it, I suppose.
Why can't you do that? Maybeck challenged.
I wasn't the one to solve the fable. I'm not the one brought here to fix things. You are. All five of you.
But you could get the pen if you wanted.
Could I? If an old goat like me from Imagineering has to get inside a display in one man's dream, they'd probably fire me. I have no business there.
Which display? Philby asked. You know which display, don't you?
I have an idea, Wayne admitted.
Sheesh!
Maybeck huffed, fed up.
There are several replicas, a drafting table, his school desk, even Walt's original office. A pen. It's conceivable it could be in any of these. You must bring me the pen the moment you have it, and understand the threat you now pose to the Overtakers. Don't underestimate that. Not for a minute. You've solved a fable. They may know that, or at least suspect it. If the pen is valuable enough, powerful enough, to hide inside a fable, then one can imagine we are not the only ones after it.
You're afraid of her, Willa said softly. You created us because you're afraid of her.
Are you old enough to understand the saying, don't shoot the messenger? Wayne asked.
Finn had heard the expression before, and judging by the faces of the others, they had too. He thought he understood Wayne's message.
You're not the one who created us, he said. So who did?
Voices came loudly up the back stairs from outside. Several men. One of them said,
Was this where you saw them?
We were spotted,
Charlene said in a panic.
You'll have to go now, Wayne said.
He looked toward Finn, who said in a panicked voice,
The remote's back in the apartment. That's where we leave it.
The sound of feet coming up the stairs grew all the louder, a pounding on the back door. Wayne had a contented smile on his face.
You don't think we'd do this without making a backup, do you?
He said, holding up an exact replica of their remote. Another loud knock on the door.
Open up, please!
A deep male voice commanded.
Gather around,
Wayne said, calm and relaxed, as if he had not a care in the world. The DHIs huddled together. Wayne pushed the button. 28. The transportation and ticket center hummed with conversation as a tangle of park visitors shuttled between buses and monorails. Some families were ending their days just as others were starting. On a Monday afternoon, thick with humidity, the tired and impatient mingled with the exhilarated and anxious. For some, a day spent, for others, an evening full of promise. The humidity hung in the air so heavily you could practically wear it like a coat. Above the giggles and shrieks of excited children and the scornful reproaches of their exhausted parents, the purr of a train approaching could be heard.
We're off to a late start, Philby announced,
checking his watch. Charlene's cheerleader practice had delayed them.
It's almost 4:45.
One man's dream closes at 5,
Willa informed them.
We're okay, we'll make it.
She turned to Finn.
What if we were accidentally inside when it closed for the night?
Philby shot down her suggestion.
There's no way 5 of us will be able to hide out in there and get locked in. Forget it,
Finn said.
But one of us might be able to,
Philby said.
There are at least 9 security cameras inside one man's dream. If even one of us is seen in there after closing, we're in big trouble.
Maybe not.
A familiar voice came from behind Finn. It was Amanda. She was sitting in the front part of the train car, her back directly to them, exactly behind Finn. This is anything but coincidence, he thought. Finn had barely spoken to her since that day at the skate park, where it had seemed to him she'd known too much, or was keeping something from him. His intentional avoidance of her hung in the air between them. Finn introduced her around to those who had not met her. She told Finn candidly,
"You saw me in the park last night. Main Street. Not far behind you."
The four other DHIs looked at Finn as if he'd betrayed them.
"That's because I followed Jez there after school,"
Amanda explained.
"Jez?"
Maybeck blurted out. Amanda said,
"Jez never left the park at closing. She went into Pirates of the Caribbean and never came out. I hid in the bathrooms behind Pirates and waited for the park to clear. Then I hid in the stairwell and waited."
"Are we supposed to believe this?" Charlene asked.
"Believe what you want," Amanda snapped at her. "After closing, it was her turn to hide. She took a place on Main Street. You guys just arrived all of a sudden. I mean, one minute no one was there on the bench, and then there you were. It was the weirdest thing. And she followed you."
"And you followed her,"
Finn said. Philby tested her.
"She followed us where?"
Amanda answered.
"She followed you and Finn to Thunder Mountain, and so did I."
Maybeck nodded. What he heard made sense.
"This is solid, guys. This girl Jez is trouble."
"And later she went over to Cosmic Rays," Amanda said.
Charlene went pale.
"But why?"
"Yeah, why would Jez follow us?"
Philby asked curiously. Amanda said,
"Curiosity killed the cat."
Finn and Maybeck exchanged glances. Finn asked,
"Where is she now?"
"She followed you, Finn, today, after school. I lost her at the transportation and ticket center, but she's around here someplace."
Charlene snapped.
"Since when did you become our guardian angel?"
"My mother works at MGM," Amanda said. "In administration, in one of the old bungalows. I've been there like a zillion times. They know me. The main security office for the park is in that building."
She hesitated a moment, and then said,
"I know those guys. I can distract them. If I think they're going to see you on one of their screens, I can draw their attention."
"I just bet you can," snarled Charlene.
"I don't know about that,"
Finn said. It sounded complicated to him. Risky.
"I can help you," she suggested. "I can signal if they're onto you."
Still, Finn hesitated.
"You need someone to warn you."
He'd known for some time that she wanted to be a DHI, wanted to be part of the adventure. Showing off her knowledge of the area, Amanda told Philby,
"Listen, there's a sound and light tower right there at the side door to One Man's Dream. From up there, one of you would be able to see pretty much all around the park. You'd be able to spot the security patrols way before they reached the attraction."
Willa suggested,
"All in favor of Amanda helping us out?"
Everyone's hand went up, but Finn's was noticeably slower than the others. Noting his reluctance, Amanda scrunched her face at him.
"I just don't want you getting into trouble, or worse, for something you're not involved in," he said. "This can be dangerous, Amanda. You need to know that before you volunteer."
Amanda's nostrils flared. She looked angry.
"I can take care of myself."
Willa and Charlene grinned. Charlene, usually the most reluctant of the five, said,
"Okay then, it's decided."
Once inside MGM Park, they quickly split up to avoid recognition. Finn and Willa headed up Sunset Boulevard. Amanda split from the group, presumably to reach security. Philby sought out the sound and light tower, with Charlene as his runner in case he spotted trouble.
"You don't look so hot," Willa told Finn.
"I'm just nervous, I guess,"
Finn said. They had come up with a decent plan on how he might hide inside One Man's Dream, but he wasn't eager to test it. He asked,
"What if they count heads? What if they know how many go in and out of the theater?"
Willa considered this and then said,
"Nah, they don't do stuff like that. Maybe they count people going into the park but not onto the rides. That doesn't make sense."
"They might."
"They might, but they don't."
The two passed the 50-foot-high replica of Mickey's sorcerer hat that stood in front of the Chinese theater and served as a bandstand. They stopped at a kiosk selling pins and film, hats, stuffed animals, and postcards. One Man's Dream was crowded with grandparents and mothers with strollers trying to escape the muggy heat. Finn passed several displays dealing with the history of the park and the ways in which the Imagineers had realized Walt Disney's dream. Willa waited near the entrance, doing a good imitation of a girl waiting for a friend.
One of the displays showed Walt Disney's second-grade school desk from Marceline, Missouri. Finn studied the desk carefully, wondering if Disney's first pen might be inside. Its wooden top was hinged, with a shallow circular well cut into it for a bottle of ink.
"Not exactly like your desk at school, I bet," said a woman standing behind Finn.
She was very old, with kind eyes, translucent skin, and a faint white mustache. She wore an employee name tag that said Charlotte. Her hair was the color of laundry lint. Her eyelashes were so pale that they were almost invisible, which left her eyelids looking like weird flesh-colored cups that blinked down over her eyes like a bird's. Her voice sounded like the squeal of a pinched balloon. Finn, who'd hoped to go through the exhibit unnoticed, blurted out,
It didn't do anything.
I didn't say you did, young man.
She looked at him curiously.
Am I too late to watch the movie on Walt Disney's life?
No, not at all. There's a final showing in...
She checked her watch.
Well, you'll have to hurry. It's just down the hall and to your right. It's biographical, you understand. It's not like the Bug movie or PhilharMagic. Nothing like those.
I know,
Finn said. The woman's heavy perfume made him dizzy. It trailed after her like car exhaust. She apparently felt obliged to make sure he made it on time. Together they walked past other displays. Finn caught sight of Walt Disney's West Coast office, the display Wayne had mentioned.
Here we go, young man,
the woman said.
Wait here, and they'll show you inside.
Finn saw another display, this one open to the air, not sealed under glass. A drafting table with a bunch of pens and papers. Wayne had mentioned this as well. Which display? Finn wondered. The doors to the theater opened. Finn and a few others were shown inside. Finn took a seat near the back. The lights dimmed almost immediately, and the film started. Finn watched a few minutes of it, slouched down in his seat, and then slipped onto the floor. He curled up tightly under the seat in front of him in order to hide. The film ran about 15 minutes. Finn was already feeling stiff by the time it finished. The theatergoers exited into daylight. Finn's heart raced in his chest as he hid and the doors to the outside thumped shut, closing him in. The theater darkened. More sounds, ushers making small talk, people saying goodbye and goodnight. Then silence. Finn, still on the floor, uncoiled and relaxed his tight muscles. 2 minutes passed. 5. No sounds at all beyond the almost painful beating of his heart. He got to his feet, gathered his courage, and called out,
"Hello?"
Prepared to invent some excuse if he raised anyone. Nothing. He pushed through the doors and walked back into the main gallery. He tried once more.
"Hello?"
If discovered, he'd claimed he'd fallen asleep during the film. Nothing. A few lights had been left on, but the ones inside the displays were all off. Finn checked out the drafting table. He was disappointed to read the little sign that described the display. There was no mention of the drafting table having belonged to Walt Disney. It was just one of the many drafting tables used by his animation staff. There were a couple of pens and pencils, a clear plastic draftsman's triangle, and some papers scattered around. Finn carefully climbed into the display and opened some small drawers of a cabinet next to the table. All empty. Next, he returned to the display of Walt Disney's original office. There on the desk, both a mug and a cork globe held an abundance of pens and pencils. A dozen or more. My first pen. Finn knew just by looking that this was the place. He didn't want to steal anything. He reminded himself that this had been Wayne's idea, not his. They were borrowing the pens, nothing more. Wayne could return them. No harm. But how to get inside the glassed-in display? Finn didn't see any kind of door, except the one leading into the office, and it was in the back wall of the display. He saw no way in. He searched for a possible access door into the back of the displays, assuming there was a hallway behind the various windows. The only door he found, toward the main entrance, was not only locked, but far away from the office display. He backtracked, passing all the displays again. He found no door. No way back there. But there had to be a way. Some way to move furniture, dust, clean, change light bulbs. Only as he passed a blue poster for the third time did he happen to notice a small floor-to-ceiling gap. The poster was a sketch of the Earth with Mickey Mouse ears. The Earth was crying. The small description explained that this drawing had been a newspaper cartoon that ran following Disney's death. It depicted the world mourning his loss. Finn shoved his fingers into the small crack and pulled. The poster moved and the door came open. He was inside in an instant. Just as he stepped into relative darkness behind the door, Finn heard three loud knocks at a distance. Willa's signal. Terror flooded him. Security guards were either in the area or headed for One Man's Dream. Five knocks would signal that the coast was clear. He pulled the door shut behind him. This was as good a place to hide as any. A moment later, he stood absolutely still as he identified deep voices nearby, just through the wall, two men talking inside the attraction.
"You say it was an anonymous call?"
One guard speaking to another.
"A girl. Young girl at that,"
the other said.
"That's what Manny said, yeah. Probably just a prank. You know kids that age. But if Manny wants it checked out..."
"Then we check it out."
"Got that right."
Finn held his breath as they drew close.
"Thing is," the second guard said, "the front door was locked good and tight. We checked the other doors and we got nothing to worry about. No way someone's getting in here if all the doors are tight. False alarm. Plain and simple. Am I right?"
"You're right."
"Okay, then let's get some coffee."
"I'm all over that."
Finn waited several more long minutes without moving, practically without breathing. Who had called security? Amanda? And she fed them a bunch of lies? Did she want Finn to get caught because of the way he'd excluded her recently? If they were caught now, their attempt to stop Maleficent would be thwarted. The park would eventually fall under her control. Worse, if she took her powers outside the park, who knew what would happen? Who knew what would become of the five kids who had once been DHIs? One anonymous call had nearly ruined everything. Now he heard a distant sound, five dull beats, like a fist on glass. The signal. His eyes adjusted to what little light was available in this back hallway. He turned left toward the office display and soon reached a door marked WD's office. Finn opened this door, stepped inside, and was now standing in the display. He moved carefully, not wanting to nudge anything out of place or disturb the office's contents. The air was stuffy and unusually dry. He kept watch out in the empty gallery beyond. On the wall, a tiny red light began flashing, a sensor of some kind, though an alarm did not sound. An environmental sensor, perhaps, measuring heat and humidity for the sake of the display's contents. Finn's body heat and his breathing, along with the open door to the back hall, had tripped some kind of silent alarm. He quickly snatched up all the pens and pencils from both the black coffee mug and the cork globe. He was nearly out of the office door when he saw a scroll of architectural plans leaning up against the desk. Walt had told Wayne that he had plans for this place. Finn, like Wayne and others, had taken the wrong meaning. Plans, as in drawings, not plans, as in ideas. Finn scooped them up. He heard three loud thuds on the gallery's outer door, another signal from Willa. Someone was coming. Again. Finn hurried out the office's back door, shut it carefully, and headed down the back hallway. But where to go? He wondered. He saw an exit sign at either end of the hallway. Which way? He looked left, looked right, but was frozen by indecision. He headed right, away from Willa's warning. Down the narrow hall, a jog left, he faced a metal exit door with a panic bar. He hesitated, for at that very second, an icy frost splintered and cracked the inside surface of the door. Something, someone, was just on the other side, and it wasn't security guards. The frosty image slowly took the shape of a human hand. Finn jumped back. He could see his breath now, could feel that same penetrating cold getting to him again. He turned to run but could not move his legs. He teetered, ready to fall. The frost on the inside of the door spread from the thin fingers of the hand like a web. Finn glanced down to see that the floor had iced up beneath him. It was like standing on a skating rink. Then his body moved forward, all on its own, sliding on the ice, as if drawn by a magnet. He put out his hands to stop himself, but they stuck to the door. That force continued to pull him. Now his body glued itself to the door. Inch by inch, his head was pulled until his cheek froze to the metal. Pulled against the door's panic bar, he feared the door might come open. Whoever, whatever, was on the other side wanted the pens and pencils in his pocket. The overtakers. The plan squirted out from under his arm and came unrolled as they hit the floor. Finn could see they were faded blueprints of the various parks. One by one, the sheets slipped under the door while Finn was helpless to stop them. The panic bar inched ahead, and as it did, the mechanism drew the bolt of the lock away from the lip of metal that secured the door shut. Behind him, the voices inside the gallery grew louder as the security guards drew closer.
"Hey, Manny, over here! Think I got something!"
The guards were in the back hallway. Whatever was on the other side of the door made a sound like wintry wind. Finn tried to dismiss it, ignore it, but it grew louder. Then, from outside the door, Finn heard shouting. The roar of the wind immediately lessened, fading away, replaced by the sounds of running feet. The ice on the inside of the door slowly melted, sending streams of water rushing down. Finn heard the slap of boots as the security guards drew closer. He pushed the panic bar. The ice cracked and the door opened. Finn tore some skin off the palms of both hands as he pulled away from the icy bar. Bright late afternoon sunshine blinded him. He could just vaguely make out Willa, a good distance away, running toward him. Behind him, a girl with long hair. Jez? Amanda? Finn took off in that direction, curious to find who had caused that ice. The fleeing girl rounded the building's back corner, out of sight. Finn sprinted to catch up, calling,
"Hey! Wait! You! Wait up!"
He was no longer afraid of this person. He wanted answers. He, too, hurried around the corner. He collided with someone, and they went down hard. Finn came to his knees, dazed.
"You!"
he said. He sat face to face with Amanda.
"You!"
he said again, desperate for an explanation.
"You caused the cold! Finn, you're the one!"
He gasped in disbelief, hating her for all her lies.
"Me?"
She looked astonished. But was she just acting? She said in a whisper,
"Did you get what you came for?"
Finn couldn't get a word out, his chest tight, his fists clenched.
"Finn, please, you've got this wrong."
He rose to his feet and backed away from her, not daring to take his eyes off her.
"I trusted you,"
he said.
"Finn,"
she pleaded,
"there's so much to explain, but not here."
"Not anywhere," he fired back.
"Not ever." "Run!"
Willa called out, catching up.
"They're coming!"
Amanda, still seated on the pavement, had tears in her eyes. Willa came to a breathless stop.
"Finn, the guards!"
He and Amanda had not broken eye contact, though they did now. He backed up at first, still looking at her. Then he turned and ran as hard and as fast as he could. 29. Mickey's not-so-scary Halloween party, the most fun of any of the park's special events, was not to be missed. It provided a good opportunity for the kids to bring the pens to Wayne, since they would have to deliver them in person, not as DHIs. All five of the kids had planned to attend, using up one of their legal visits to the park. Finn wasn't sure who to trust anymore, but certainly not the pirates. Their apparent connection to Jez made him all the more curious, and all the more cautious. The party took place at night, after hours. Main Street was decorated to match the occasion. Costumes were all but mandatory, and ghoulish characters walked the streets, adding to the chills and thrills. Philby believed the party also provided Maleficent a rare opportunity to use all the costuming to hide herself. A witch would go unnoticed on a night like this. She could meet with the other overtakers without raising an eyebrow, and could move about the park freely. If she was plotting a way to take over the park, this, of all nights, seemed the perfect time for her to spring her plan. The kids, not DHIs, had a plan in place to keep both Pirates of the Caribbean and the Haunted Mansion under close watch. They chose the Haunted Mansion because ghosts and goblins would serve a witch well, and if Maleficent planned to take over the park, now, or in the future, she would need an army of overtakers supporting her. Finn's mother dropped him off in the school parking lot. He suffered through the usual lecture from his mother about good and proper behavior. Snore. Over 300 of his fellow schoolmates, including Dillard, rode school bus shuttles to the Magic Kingdom. These same buses were to take them all back to the school at 11 o'clock when the party ended and the park closed. Parents would pick up their kids in the school's lot. Once inside, the plan was for the kids to meet at the statue of Roy O. Disney outside the fire station in Town Square. From there they would divide and conquer, as Maybeck put it. Having struggled with costume ideas, Finn came dressed in black jeans, a black t-shirt, and a new cape. He wore a black mask over just his eyes. He thought of himself as Zorro, when in truth, he was dressed for any adventures they might encounter. At 8 o'clock, thousands of kids and their families poured into the park wearing elaborate costumes that added to the heightened sense of fun. In any other year, Finn would have headed straight to a ride to get in line, ready to scream and be frightened. Despite its name, Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party offered plenty of frights to its guests. Music was pumped into the park, not the typical Disney songs, most of which Finn could hum from memory, but instead monster tunes and ghost songs, punctuated by fits of ghoulish laughter. The park came alive with the sounds. Arriving as planned, a few minutes past opening, Finn found it difficult to pick out his new friends. This was partly because there were so many people flooding into the park, and partly because of the costumes.
"There you are,"
Dillard Cole said. He elected to come as a crab, wearing a large round shell made of brown paper, his hands in oven mitts for claws, and several sets of springy legs protruding from the shell.
"You look like a giant tick," Finn said. "Crabs aren't brown."
"Grocery bags. It was the only paper we could find."
From up close, Finn saw that Dillard's costume was indeed made from dozens of grocery bags cut open and taped together.
"You seen anyone from school?" Finn asked.
"Nah. You?" "Nah. I hate Halloween,"
Dillard said.
"Then why'd you come?"
The crab shrugged, all of its legs bouncing at once.
"The candy. Where you been anyway? Seems like we never hang out anymore."
It was true. Finn's life had changed since the crossing over had begun. He'd quickly made new friends with the DHIs. Their quest was all he thought of anymore. Even his homework was suffering.
"You know what's going on," he said. "Or at least some of it."
"You're superpowered,"
Dillard teased.
"Yeah, like that."
Finn hadn't told Dillard half the stuff he'd been through in the past few weeks. He led a secret life now. Until this moment, he hadn't realized just how secret. Worse, until he and the others fixed things, until the growing power of the Overtakers was challenged and stopped, his life wasn't going to get much better. Staying awake all night, feeling tired all day, battling his parents, telling his mom the truth, which she, of course, found unbelievable.
"What ride do you want to go on first?"
Dillard asked.
"Earth Defend! Hello!"
Finn couldn't hear because he'd spotted a witch heading for them. Among all the other costumes, this one in particular stood out, not just for the costume, but for the girl who wore it. As Dillard turned to follow Finn's gaze, his crab body and legs hit kids behind him, drawing jeers of complaint and clearing a space around him.
"Check out Cruella De Vil,"
Dillard said, following Finn's gaze.
"Hey, isn't that..."
"Her name is Jez."
"From the car wash."
"Right."
Jez wore a skin-tight black-and-white leotard with black-and-white tights. Her hair was half-black, half-white. She carried a masquerade mask on a stick and wore white gloves that ran all the way up to her elbows. The small mask was black, like Finn's Zorro mask. She had a black beauty mark drawn onto her cheek to the left of her lips, which were exaggerated by bright red lipstick. She looked like a college girl. Her cape swished dramatically as she walked. It wasn't made of cheap costume material, but something much nicer. She drew looks from a good number of boys as she passed. She headed directly to Finn and Dillard. The song playing from the bushes was Monster Mash. Jez stepped up to Finn, standing a little too close. They almost touched. Finn felt tempted to take a step back, but held his ground. Jez spoke softly, privately.
"Great minds think alike," she said. "Our masks," she added, after Finn failed to respond.
"Hey, Jez,"
Finn said.
"Look out, Zorro," she warned. "I might put a spell on you."
She briefly dropped the mask and met eyes with Finn. She smiled. Dillard coughed, a coughing crab with dancing legs. He cleared an even bigger space for himself in the crowd.
"Maybe you already have," Finn suggested.
She said,
"A good spell, I hope."
"Are you a good witch?"
"The best," she said.
"Can't you tell?" She spun, her cape rising. She ended her twirl facing Dillard and said to him,
"Aren't you going to offer to get me something to drink, Sebastian?"
"Hey, she guessed I'm Sebastian,"
Dillard said proudly to Finn.
"You've got enough hands, don't you?"
she asked, tweaking one claw and sending it bouncing up and down. Finn said,
"He's not an errand boy. He's my friend."
"Hey, I don't mind,"
Dillard said. He raised his oven mitts, made claw motions, and waddled off in search of something for them to drink.
"He's a good guy," Finn said when Jez faced him again. "He's big, so people make fun of him, but he can't help it."
She ignored what he'd said.
"Want to do the Haunted Mansion with me?"
Jez asked. Finn felt his throat tighten in panic. The mansion was an attraction that seemed perfect to hide Overtakers.
"It'll be too crowded," he said.
An awkward moment settled between them.
"Miss Congeniality,"
Finn said.
"What?" "The Sandra Bullock movie,"
Finn inquired. He pointed toward the park entrance.
"A friend of mine, Charlene. You met her at the sports park,"
he said. Charlene also wore makeup and lipstick, which gave her high cheekbones and a thinner face. It was a good disguise. Her blue cocktail dress swished as she paraded straight over to Finn. Charlene looked Jez up and down.
Adorable, she said insincerely.
Imaginative, Jez said back to her. Charlene ignored Jez.
Sorry if I'm late, she said. No prob.
Finn and I are going over to the Haunted Mansion, Jez announced.
Wanna come?
Charlene complained.
But, Finn, you promised me the first ride, remember, Finn?
She was giving him the excuse they needed to get over to Pirates and be with the others.
When you're right,
Finn said, a little awkwardly. He asked Jez if he could catch up to her later for the Haunted Mansion. She frowned. Dillard returned bearing too many drinks to hold. He dropped one. Jez reached out and caught it as it fell. She not only snagged the cup, but somehow managed to catch all the soda as well. Not a drop spilled to the ground. It was an impossible feat. Finn took a moment to replay it in his mind.
How did you do that?
Charlene took the third cup from Dillard and thanked him.
Jez said.
Dillard had intended one of the three for himself, but didn't tell that to Charlene. When he moved, his various arms bounced wildly. He mumbled and headed off to get another.
You didn't answer me,
Finn reminded Jez.
How did you do that?
Jez stumbled over her words as she made what was clearly a lame excuse.
My mom doesn't like me messing up the kitchen. I've gotten pretty good at not spilling.
Catwoman approached. Finn recognized Amanda immediately. Finn hadn't spoken to her since their collision behind One Man's Dream. He couldn't sort everything out. What she'd been doing there. Why the cold hadn't seemed to affect her. He didn't feel like hanging out with her tonight. He wasn't sure how to tell her. Dillard returned fairly quickly and said hello to Amanda. Her attention remained on Finn.
Finn?
Amanda said. Finn turned his back, not sure what to do. Not that, he realized, as she stormed off. He felt rotten. Finn offered Charlene and Jez another drink and then headed off himself, grateful to get away. The girls hung with Dillard, who struggled to get a paper cup to his mouth. He spilled some soda down his front when one of his own claws banged against him. Amanda snuck up behind Finn in the soda line.
I saw her, Finn. Jez, behind One Man's Dream. Those monitors are old and fuzzy, but I'm sure it was her, and I came over there to warn you.
Again, Finn didn't know what to say. Didn't know what to think. He didn't turn around. Amanda continued.
Doesn't that strike you as a little odd? A little too coincidental? Her being there like that? Right then?
You were there, too. That struck me as odd as well.
I just explained.
They stepped away from the soda line. Finn juggled three cups.
You weren't sure it was her. You just said so yourself.
Think about her name, Finn. Jezebel. Come on. The Bible?
He was not exactly a Bible scholar.
Jezebel is wicked, evil, just like a witch. And that fits with the cold, right?
Amanda asked.
It could have been anyone doing that,
Finn blurted out, thinking of the woman in the car. She leaned back and looked at him as if she didn't know him.
What are you thinking? Are you serious? Me? Listen, there's something you need to hear. Something I have to tell you about her. I'm not supposed to... Do you understand that? This could get me in big trouble.
Suddenly Amanda shuddered. Her head jerked up toward the sky. Her shoulders shrugged and stiffened. Her eyes rolled in her head. Finn thought she was going to faint. He dumped all the drinks into a nearby trash can, freeing his hands, and took her by the arm. Then by the waist, she sank into his arms. She felt cold, really cold, and stiff, as if she were suffering some kind of seizure. Finn, wanting to avoid making a scene, walked her to a bench and sat her down. A commotion erupted behind him. He turned to see Charlene now sitting down on the sidewalk, her head hanging slack over her knees. She had apparently fainted as well. An adult hurried toward Charlene.
Finn!
It was Willa, late to arrive.
No time to explain, he said. You've got to get Charlene over here before people start asking questions. The giant crab? That's Dillard. He'll help you. Hurry!
Willa, who'd come as Dorothy from the Wizard of Oz, rushed across to Dillard, took hold of one of his oven mitts, and dragged him over to the wilted Charlene. Finn checked Amanda. She looked half asleep, her eyes barely open. Thankfully, she was breathing normally.
Amanda!
He said, but got nothing from her. A brownout, he thought. But a brownout affecting a human, not a DHI. If you're not careful, I'll cast a spell on you. Hadn't Jez said something like that? Was he imagining that she'd said that? He looked around, his eyes searching for Jez. Hadn't Amanda just been about to tell him something to do with Jez when she'd fainted? Willa and Dillard had Charlene walking between them, definitely a good sign.
There!
Finn finally spotted Jez. She stood on the far side of the street, talking to an adult, a thin woman in a large witch's hat, her back to Finn. He watched as Jez pointed in his direction. He felt goosebumps race up his spine. What was she talking about? Then, just for an instant, Jez accidentally met eyes with Finn, from clear across the street. A moment later, Jez led the woman off, absorbed by the crowd.
"Listen," Finn said, trying to think. "I gotta go," he told Willa.
"What? Just leave us here?"
Willa asked, astonished.
"You know anything about the Bible?"
he asked Willa.
"A little, sure."
"I think I know what's going on,"
he announced to Willa, just as Philby and Maybeck showed up.
"I'm glad someone does," Maybeck said.
Philby had come wearing a white curly wig and big black glasses, calling himself Einstein. Maybeck had sprayed his hair gray and wore the flag of South Africa on his sleeve.
"Nelson Mandela," Maybeck told Finn.
"You guys come with me,"
Finn instructed, as he spotted Jez and the woman again. They were well down Main Street, heading toward the castle. Amanda sat up suddenly, surprising them all. Willa yelped.
"Don't!"
Amanda gasped, looking directly at Finn.
"You have no idea of their powers!"
She slumped back in that same lost state again.
"We've gotta go! Now!"
he told the boys. The three boys hurried down Main Street.
"What about, you know?"
Maybeck asked. Finn tapped his chest.
"I brought the pens."
"Aren't we going the wrong way? Shouldn't we be going to the fire station?"
"Don't ask me how, but Jez did this to Charlene and Amanda, made them sick."
"That's ridiculous,"
Maybeck said, his voice raspy. They were nearly running. Finn explained.
"Jez hooked up with the witch, in costume, or for real, super skinny, long black hair, sound like anyone we've seen lately. And oh, by the way, Jez just happens to be wearing long white gloves."
"Can I just say you've completely lost it?"
Maybeck said.
"And by completely, I mean 100%.
"Gloves! Jez is wearing white gloves tonight. They go to her elbows. Amanda and I saw those same gloves at..."
"The car wash,"
Maybeck answered. He'd seen them too.
Finn said,
"Jez is a witch, and so is her mother."
Philby and Maybeck looked stunned.
"You want me to prove it? You'll come with me."
Following now, Philby said,
"What if you happen to be right? In that case, what are we doing chasing a witch and her daughter? I mean, how stupid can we be?"
Maybeck huffed.
"I'm gonna have you guys institutionalized. Am I the only sane person left?"
"Wait!"
Finn said, stopping them. They ducked behind a pillar in front of a Main Street shop. He pointed. Jez and the woman turned left at the plaza, just before the castle.
"How much do you want to bet they're heading to pirates?"
Remembering the conversation on the monorail, Philby said,
"Amanda told us Jez disappeared there."
"A figure of speech," Maybeck interjected. "That's all."
As Finn led them left off the street as well, Maybeck said more seriously,
"Listen, I've been there, where Charlene and Amanda are right now. Feeling sick like that? You do not want to mess with these people."
"They aren't people,"
Finn said.
"That's the whole point. If they were people, then Wayne and the others could deal with them. This is up to us, you guys. No one else is going to do this."
"We're going in there after them,"
Philby said. Jez and the woman arrived at the entrance to Pirates of the Caribbean. Sure enough, they headed inside.
"I do not like this," Maybeck said. "What happened to voting?"
"All in favor?"
Finn asked. He and Philby raised their hands. Maybeck groaned. They stopped short of the entrance and stared warily at the old Spanish-style building.
"Okay," Philby said. "Now I'm scared."
30. At night, in the midst of a Halloween costume party, Pirates of the Caribbean took on a more menacing feel, something each boy felt as he entered. Flamenco guitar music echoed from walls that flickered in the light of dim lanterns. And while the mood was festive, the Halloween party was a special event, so the crowds were much smaller than usual. The result was an attraction with deserted hallways and a hollow echo to every sound. The boys hurried down a stone corridor. Finn had lost sight of Jez and her mother just as he heard the older woman's raspy voice saying,
"Over here."
This was followed by a slight squeak of metal, a door swinging on hinges, and a resounding clang that reverberated off the walls.
"You hear that?"
Maybeck asked. The trio slowed. As they reached a sharp turn in the hall, Maybeck bent down, pretending to tie his running shoe, to let a group of eager teens race past them. When the hall was empty again, Philby pointed to a short staircase set into the wall, cordoned off by a chain. To the right of the hall was a pit, a jail cell holding a pair of pirate figures engaged in a game of chess. Maybeck hurried forward, jumped the chain, and climbed the short stairs. He reported back down to the others.
"There's a pair of cannons and a kind of turret thing. Looks like the top of a fort or something."
Philby, ever the academic, explained.
"It's a mock-up of a battlement, with twin 8-pound cannons and their shot and woven baskets."
He'd done his homework, as usual. Finn's attention remained on the jail cell and the sturdy iron bars mounted into the concrete. He tested its door. It swung open, making the same eerie squeak they'd heard only moments before. Excited voices rang from the entrance to the attraction. More people coming. Maybeck whispered softly,
"If we're going in, we're going in. We can't stand around staring at it."
The boys stepped inside the heavy jail cell door, and Finn pulled it shut. They ducked into shadow as several groups of kids hurried past toward the start of the ride. Finn then motioned down into the pit and the two pirates playing chess. It was a long way down, and there were no stairs. Philby found a weighted rope connected to an overhead pulley.
"Care to take the elevator?"
He tested the rope, held on tightly, and stepped off. He floated to the bottom of the pit. A moment later, the other boys had reached the jail's floor.
"Okay, this is really weird," Finn said. "But I know this guy."
He pointed to one of the pirates. He knew this figure from the laser battle. Looking more carefully, he realized that he recognized both pirates. He dared to reach over and gently poke the arm of the nearest pirate. Thankfully, it was a model, like a mannequin, and he relaxed. They emerged into a long, straight hallway that lay in shadowy twilight. Jail cells lined both sides.
"It's a prison," Maybeck said.
Finn stopped and examined the shiny piece of metal that hung from one of the doors. It turned out to be a padlock, a sparkling new padlock. Each of the cells was secured with a similar lock, all brand new. On further inspection, many of the hinges to the cell doors had been recently repaired. Fresh weld marks abounded.
"This has all been fixed up," Philby said. "And recently. What's with that?"
"Padlocks," Finn said. 100 padlocks stolen. Remember what Wayne said?"
He recalled his father mentioning welding gear being stolen. The Overtakers. Philby handled one of the padlocks.
"You're not saying. You want to explain it? Go ahead,"
Finn said. Maybeck said,
"Listen, this makes sense. These cells are huge. Each cell could hold, what, 10, maybe 20 people?"
The boys continued through the gloomy jail. Philby did the math.
"That means you could lock up hundreds of people down here. You realize that?"
Finn said.
"Park employees. They're planning a takeover," Philby said. "They stole the locks. They fixed up the cells."
Finn stated,
"They obviously plan to use these." "This is exactly what Wayne was afraid of," Philby said. "Now I get it. If they organize, and if they have real powers, it's possible they could take over the park." "And once they did," Finn said, "what would happen to the guests who arrived?"
"It's not just a jail, guys. Welcome to the dungeon."
Maybeck pointed to a door at the end of the jails. The door hung open, revealing a tomb-like darkness beyond.
"And yes," he added quickly, "I realize how stupid this sounds."
Finn reminded,
"Remember, we're not crossed over. We're not going to turn invisible. We're not going to glow. We're not going to walk through walls. So if we run, we run."
"I'm all over that," Maybeck said.
They paused at the door and listened to high-pitched voices faintly coming through the darkness. Philby whispered,
"I suggest we stick to the shadows."
"Shadows?" Maybeck questioned. "It's pitch black in there."
"It won't be," Philby assured him.
Maybeck said,
"No matter what, we hang together. You do not want to go one-on-one with these people.